I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Fox News host Tucker Carlson just spent a week in Budapest, Hungary. The visit comes about 8 months before the 2022 Hungarian parliamentary elections, where Prime Minister Viktor Orban is expected to face his first real challenge since returning to power in 2010.
So it was a deeply revealing moment, and we're going to have more. We've had a number of them here in Hungary. A small country with a lot of lessons for the rest of us.
That, of course, is Carlson on his broadcast. Now, Tucker Carlson also interviewed Orban. He gave a speech at a conference backed by Orban, and he spent time praising Hungary's success. For example, in one broadcast, Carlson highlighted his admiration of a Hungarian border fence designed to keep out migrants. He also repeatedly compared Hungary and the United States, such as this moment, where Carlson claims that in the U.S., vocal critics of President Joe Biden risk being silenced or even physical threats. But in Hungary, Carlson says,
opposition figures here don't worry that they will be hurt for their opinions. Neither, by the way, does the prime minister. Orban regularly drives himself with no security. So who's freer? In what country are you more likely to lose your job for disagreeing with the ruling class's orthodoxy? The answer is pretty obvious, though if you're an American, it is painful to admit it, as we have discovered.
So why is a Fox News personality lavishing so much attention on a small European nation? It's because Prime Minister Viktor Orban won. He serves as a model of success for American conservatism. Previous guests on our show have said, if you squint hard enough, Hungary still looks like a democracy. I mean, there are those upcoming elections, after all, in 2022. But Hungary is also a nation moving towards autocracy. Here's Kim Shepley, professor of international affairs at Princeton University and author of the forthcoming book, The Frankenstate, How Orban Undermined Democracy and Provided a Model for the World. She told us back in June about what happened following Prime Minister Orban's victory in 2010.
And he won with a bare majority of the vote, but he got 67% of the seats in the parliament. In a system in which a single two-thirds vote of the parliament could change anything in the Constitution. And it was that lineup that gave him the legal power to do what he's done, and that is to shut down Hungarian democracy.
Okay.
And also to prevent himself from ever losing an election again.
And now Tucker Carlson is celebrating that story to millions of American viewers on Fox News. Well, Sarah Posner is an investigative journalist who's reported on Viktor Orban's relationship with the United States for many years. She's also author of Unholy, Why White Evangelicals Worship at the Altar of Donald Trump, and she joins us now. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk about this much longer relationship between American conservatives and Viktor Orban that predates Tucker Carlson. But I wanted to actually start with this simple question to you. Is it significant that Carlson was broadcasting from Hungary directly into the homes of millions of his passionate and devoted viewers here in the United States?
Oh, it was absolutely significant. While it's true, as you were saying in the introduction, that the American right has long admired Orban and his assault on Hungarian democracy, I don't think that it's something that has spread incredibly widely in the American right. I don't think it's something that your average Fox News viewer might be intimately aware of. So Carlson's broadcast is widening and deepening the audience for this sort of sanitizing of Viktor Orban's autocracy and making him a model for America.
Now, I don't like to presume that people have, you know, intimate knowledge of every detail of the political story in every nation around the world, much as I would love for them to have learned about them all here on Point. But Sarah, before we proceed any further, when you say when we talk about Orban's dismantling of Hungarian democracy, Can you just give us a couple of examples of what we're talking about? You know, make your case about why that, what's happening in Hungary.
Well, as Professor Shepley said in your previous show that you just played here, he was able to use the 67 vote majority, the simple majority, or having that to amend the Constitution. He amended the Constitution to state that the right to life begins from conception, which is basically an attack on reproductive rights, to state that marriage is between a man and a woman, which obviously is an assault on LGBTQ rights. But he also spent a lot of time over the years from 2010 till the present, gerrymandering districts, as she said, to ensure that he would never lose an election again, attacking a free press, attacking immigration, sealing the border, stacking the judiciary with loyalists. These are all hallmarks of assaults on democratic institutions and democratic values that experts in democracy are ringing alarm bells about, not just in Hungary, but around the world.
Mm. And of course, it all faces what's sort of the remnants or whatever the current state of Hungarian democracy is, faces that test in 2022 with the parliamentary elections coming up. We'll come back to that in a second. So you have written, though, Sarah, that Carlson, while he might be one of the highest profile Americans to visit, and as I put it earlier, lavish praise on Hungary under Viktor Orban, he's definitely not the first. So take us back. When does the story of American conservatism's relationship with Hungary really begin? Where should we be looking for the start of that?
Well, I would look at 2008, when Orban is plotting his return to power, and he hires an American political strategist, Republican strategist, Arthur Finkelstein. And Finkelstein's history and legacy in the United States is advising his clients to polarize the electorate. Some of his disciples include people like Roger Stone and Paul Manafort. And he, in the 2000s, he started taking on clients in Europe. And Orban was just one of the clients that he had. And in hindsight, after Orban returned to power in 2011, Finkelstein, in a very rare public appearance, he died some years ago, but he was during his lifetime, he was pretty reclusive and didn't talk much about publicly about his work. But he gave a speech in Prague where he basically reveled in this new rise of strong men around the world and in Europe. And he thought that it was a really good thing that these leaders were dividing their countries over issues of immigration and refugees and religion even. And so Orban learns his chops from Finkelstein. And then in 2014, he hires another American politician turned lobbyist, former Congressman Connie Mack, and who's also an ally of Finkelstein. And he hires Mack to represent him in Washington and to basically burnish his image with the media, with members of Congress, with policymakers. And so basically what Orban is doing is he's hiring somebody very well versed in American politics and particularly American conservative politics to portray him not as an autocrat, but just as a run-of-the-mill conservative who, just like conservatives perceive themselves to be in the United States, under assault from liberals like George Soros.
Okay. So let's talk about Finkelstein a little bit more here. How did Orban know of Finkelstein? It was just from his observations of conservatism in the United States?
I actually don't know how they became connected with one another, but Finkelstein was making overtures to potential clients outside the United States.
Okay. So I'm just, Finkelstein died in 2017, I believe.
I think that's right.
2017. But just to give a sense as to sort of his influence in conservative circles in the United States, I see here he helped advise and propel the careers of everyone from Jesse Helms, Orrin Hatch, Alphonse D'Amato, and then even internationally, Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel. So he clearly was both influential, effective, and well-connected in yes. conservatism as well.
Definitely. And I think in Republican politics in particular, I'm not sure that he's somebody that grassroots conservative activists would necessarily be familiar with, but they would definitely be familiar with his clients.
Okay. So then tell me more, though, about, we've just got about a minute to go before the first break here. I'm just trying to understand sort of how Orban saw the United States, even before he brought Finkelstein on board here, because I understand you've written about how Orban may have even blamed his earlier parliamentary failures prior to 2010
yes.
on the United States.
Yes, and in particular on the George W. Bush administration, which had pushed back on him over his fomenting of anti-Semitism during his first term in office from 1998 to 2002. And so he blamed the United States. And remember, at the time, the United States was led by President George W. Bush, a Republican, for his 2002 loss.
Okay, so we have a lot more to talk about when we come back about this relationship between American conservatism and Hungary's Viktor Orban and the significance of Tucker Carlson of Fox News going to Hungary and bringing that story or the Carlson version of that story into the homes of millions of his viewers back here in the United States. So, Sarah, hang on. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about Hungarian authoritarianism and American conservatism through the recent news that Tucker Carlson, Fox News host, spent about a week in Budapest, Hungary, and is now talking up a storm about the example that Hungary has for the United States. I'm joined today by Sarah Posner. She's an investigative journalist and reporting fellow at Type Investigations. She's written extensively about the relationship between Hungary and the United States for several years, including for The New Republic. And she's also author of Unholy, Why White Evangelicals Worship at the Altar of Donald Trump. Well, Sarah, hang on here for a second because I want to bring in Jack Beattie, On Point news analyst, into the show here. Jack, it's good to have you back.
Hello, Meghna. Hello, Sarah.
All right. So, Jack, you were on our last show when we talked about Hungary with Kim Shepley. And so I wanted you back here today to sort of give us your take on what Sarah is describing here as a much longer and deeper relationship between influential American conservatives and Republican political operatives and Viktor Orban in Hungary. What do you make of that?
Well, in some ways, it's a repetition of a pattern in the past. In my youth, you couldn't pick up a column by William F. Buckley Jr. without seeing lavish praise of Francisco Franco or the Salazar authoritarian regime in Portugal. The right has long liked the strong man, the European strong man, not so much the Latin American one. And so this is a return to type. I think what's really striking here, and it connects Sarah's interest in the religious right with what Carlson is doing in Hungary. He this week told a group there the danger, it's warned of the danger of Christian culture being blotted out in the U.S. and Europe. I think what we see there is a beachhead of the anti-democracy fever movement in the Republican Party. Last week in the New Yorker, Jane Mayer demonstrated how the big money in the Republican Party is now aligning itself behind the big lie about the election being stolen, essentially putting big money behind shutting down American democracy. I think with this romance of Orbán and the talking about how, you know, he's protecting Christian culture against the Muslim onslaught and the decadence of the West and so on. I think that's the new beachhead there is the and it's pushing on an open door, the feeling among American evangelicals that democracy ain't good for them. They can't get what they want through it. And according to one scholar, at least, the leading ideology in the Christian right is this dominion theology. And it's a bizarre sort of amalgam of prejudices and projections from the New Testament. But at its essence, it essentially means using the power of taking over the power of the state to mandate Christian life. And that is an open door that is just waiting for the right to push on to align behind the anti-democracy movement. They've got the big money. And I think with Carlson abroad pointing to this Christian defender of Christianity in Hungary, we're going to hear more and more about an effort to get the religious right behind anti-democracy, too.
Sarah, you want to respond to that?
Well, the religious right was already behind the anti-democracy even before Tucker Carlson went to Hungary. It was on the religious right that you really saw a lot of the earlier Orbán fervor, and a lot of it did have to do with his moves to ban abortion or same-sex marriage or otherwise curtail LGBTQ rights in Hungary. They liked that. They also liked his appeals to not just ethnic nationalism, but Christian nationalism, which is what they have been promoting here in the United States, as Jack said. They've been promoting this idea that the founders intended America to be a Christian nation, and that America in more recent decades has been under attack by liberals who want to take away that Christian heritage by depriving Christians of their freedom to be against LGBTQ rights, for example, or have tried to take away Christians' freedom by upholding a separation of church and state. So this has been the main driving ideology of the Christian right for the past several decades. And now they see somebody like Viktor Orbán, who doesn't have a lot of the guardrails that we have here in terms of, you know, how easily or not easily we can change our constitution or, you know, checks and balances and separation of powers. And without those things, he was able to just go ahead and impose those sorts of policy or legislative ideas in Hungary. They really admired that. And I think they kind of wish they could do it here.
So can we just talk for a second more about exactly how Orbán did that in Hungary? Because I think these sort of draw the two threads that you and Jack are discussing here together. So let me play again a moment from our show back in June with Kim Shepley, professor of international affairs at Princeton University, who has lived in Hungary, worked in Hungary, knows Hungary extremely well. She's also an international expert on democracy as well. And she told us back in June about the parallels that she's seen between Orbán's actions when he lost power early in the 2000s, prior to his 2010 victory, but his time then and the Republican Party now. And one of those parallels she saw was religion.
he engaged in a kind of mass mobilization of civil society. And he did it a lot through the Hungarian churches. He mobilized their members. He got them all on board. They already had a pre-existing structure. He was mobilizing the kind of religious Hungarian middle class. And through doing that, he developed a very reliable base.
So, Sarah, do you want to talk about that a little more? What's not clear to me, though, is that was that sort of original to Orban, or were there connections between American churches or American religious thinkers and Hungary before that?
Well, I think that it would have been difficult for him to come into contact with American Republicans, right, activists or political strategists, and be unaware of how the Republican Party tied its fortunes to the religious right starting in the late 1970s, and how they have used that to mobilize voters, to mobilize an army of citizen lobbyists for legislation that they want, to basically have a get out the vote operation that they can activate with, you know, a few clicks on their computers. That could not have been lost on him, regardless of what his actual relationships were at the time with American religious leaders. What I do know, too, is in my coverage of religious right events and media in the late 2010s, in the run-up to the 2016 election and after Trump became president, there was a great deal of affection and admiration for what Orban had done, and a dismissal of the concerns of pro-democracy critics of Orban as basically focusing too much on just quote-unquote procedural things, as opposed to the great things, in their view, that Orban was doing to protect heritage, tradition, family, culture. That was the kind of framing from the vantage point of the American religious right.
Right. So Jack, here respond to this, because I was looking at some of the writings of Rod Dreher, right, who writes frequently in the American Conservative, and he's a best-selling sort of religious thinker as well in the United States, author of The Benedict Option, for example. He's actually been in Hungary, I believe, since April of this year, living there for several months. And just earlier this month, he wrote about, he met Tucker Carlson in Budapest, shared some meals with him as well. And in the American Conservative, Dreher writes this. He writes, it's, quote, "It's quite sensible that Tucker Carlson and other conservatives would want to figure out what the leader of this small, relatively poor Central European country has done to hold off those like George Soros and the woke leadership of the European Union to defend his country and its sovereignty. With our own conservative establishment either neutered or sidelined by pointless lib-owning enthusiasms, thinkers of the American right who actually care about saving our civilization ought to be coming to Hungary and Poland," he adds, "to study these places, to make common cause with these people. They could use our solidarity, and we could certainly use theirs." What do you make of that, Jack?
Well, that's out and out embracing of these authoritarians, and saying to believers, the things you want, you can get through authoritarianism. You can't get it through democracy. The most prophetic lines in the last decade were written a few years ago by David Frum, who was a conservative, who said, you know, if conservatives have to choose between conservatism and democracy, they're not likely to choose democracy. What we're seeing and what they have seen, conservatives, is that they can't get what they want that way. The big money can't get what it wants that way. And big religion, the fundamentalists, can't get what they want. We're in a moment here where the sort of bizarre flirtations of American right-wing elites are almost ready to inflame and to catch fire with, you know, a mass religious base through these dominionist churches and this ideology of we need, you know, before the second coming, we need to get things in order here, and we can't be held up by procedural, punctilio about democracy. No. Let's do it now. I think it's a dangerous moment, and Dreher is sort of the apostle, isn't he? He's saying, look at the, you know, here we are. Look at the city on the hill here. It's Budapest.
Well, I mean, he goes on to say this. It's actually a really remarkable article where he says, quote, "The unhappy truth is that liberalism, as we Americans have known it, is probably dead." He says, "Our future is almost certainly going to be left illiberal or right illiberal. It's not the future I would prefer, but we're not being given a choice here." But he really focuses on what he sees as left-wing illiberalism, because he says this. Which is the only power capable of standing up to woke capitalists, as well as those illiberal leftists in academia, media, sports, cultural institutions, and other places? The state. That's it.
That's it. There it is, yes. Right there.
So
grab
Sarah,
the state.
Sarah, talk about that. Tell us about how, again, Hungary is showing this the example of the state being the nexus of power against, what Dreher here is calling woke capitalists and illiberal leftists. How is that playing out in Hungary?
Well, from Dreher's perspective, right, he wrote that book, The Benedict Option, because he believed that right-wing Christians were being oppressed in the United States and might go live in their own separate communities to mm-hmm. avoid having the ideology of the left imposed upon them against their will. I mean, that is how Dreher frames it. And that's very similar to the way Viktor Orban talks about the liberals of the European Union or his conspiracy theories and scapegoating about George Soros. The idea is that these liberal ideas of, that you should welcome and protect refugees and migrants, that you should provide equal rights to LGBTQ people, that women should have reproductive freedom, and so on. Those things are depicted as woke in or liberal, in Orban's words, ideas that are being imposed upon these poor, unsuspecting traditionalists who are just trying to maintain the traditional culture and religion of their country. I mean, that's basically the way they're framing it, the same way. And so Dreher sees Viktor Orban cracking down on those things and cracking down on checks and balances and an independent judiciary and a free press and academic freedom as positives, as things that we should probably do in the United States in order to protect people like Rod Dreher from liberals.
And so, I mean, you wrote in Vice, I believe, in 2019, mm-hmm. if I'm getting, because you've written so much about this, I want to make sure I get the years right, in 2019, about how Orban's success is actually changing in your analysis, what American far-right Christianity's hopes for what they might accomplish here in the U.S. might be?
Yes. There are American religious right activists who work around the world with other like-minded religious actors to oppose what they call gender ideology, which is, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights. They believe that white Christians in Europe and the United States are facing a demographic crisis, and they need to reproduce more in order to fight this. And they come together periodically in this organization called the World Congress of Families. Viktor Orban hosted that in Budapest in 2017. And so they've made a very deliberate relationship with people like leaders like Viktor Orban, or the Law and Justice Party in Poland, as you mentioned earlier. And these are activists who used to see America as what Ronald Reagan called it, the shining city on the hill, the beacon of freedom against the totalitarianism of communism in their framing, right? But now they believe that America is under assault and being taken over by woke activists. And so therefore, maybe the shining city on the hill is elsewhere. Maybe it's on the Danube.
Huh. Jack, we've got a minute to go before the break here. What do you think?
Well, I think that's it's the new Jerusalem for them, and they can point, and they can, especially the point you made, Meghna. You know, liberals have cultural power. Let's face it; it's a liberal culture we live in. To our everlasting thanks, people can say what they mean. There can be pluralism. There can be, and so on, but conservatives see that as a form of power that is illegitimate, and that they want to strike back at, and the way to do it is through the state.
Hmm. Well, when we come back, we'll pick up more about in this analysis of the relationship, the long relationship between American conservatism and Viktor Orban in Hungary, and how that's coming to more people's attention now that Tucker Carlson has visited Hungary and broadcasted his Fox News show from there. So we'll be back in just a moment. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and I just want to give you a heads up about what we'll be talking about on the show tomorrow. It's going to be the latest in our series about Amazon. We're calling it The Prime Effect, that series where we'll be taking a look at how Amazon is changing the way we shop, work, and live. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about Amazon and surveillance. Do you have a Ring doorbell? Have you ever shopped on Amazon in any way, shape, or form? Do you know just how much data Amazon is collecting about you, not just about your online behavior, but literally physically in your neighborhood? Did you ever wonder what it does with that data or who else gets access to it? So we're going to be talking about Amazon and surveillance tomorrow on the show. So if you've got a question or a comment or a story about Amazon and surveillance, if you are even a worker for Amazon, say a delivery driver, what do you think about those cameras in your vans? Call us and leave a voicemail at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for our next episode in our Prime Effect series, and we'll have that coming up tomorrow. Today, we are talking about the long relationship between American conservatism and Viktor Orban in Hungary, Prime Minister Viktor Orban, and the significance of the fact that just this month, Fox News' Tucker Carlson spent some time in Hungary and started talking about the nation in earnest on his show, on his Fox News show, so beaming the story of Hungary into the homes of millions of Fox News viewers. I'm joined today by Sarah Posner. She is an investigative journalist and reporting fellow at Type Investigations, has written many times over the past several years about the American right and Hungary. She's also author of Unholy, Why White Evangelicals Worship at the Altar of Donald Trump. Jack Beatty is also with us. He's On Point's news analyst with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, as always. Now, we have been talking a lot about authoritarianism in Hungary, and it's not an analysis unique to us. Many scholars of democracy have been looking at Hungary and watching the actually rapid decline in democratic norms there. So, in fact, Tucker Carlson asked Prime Minister Orban about that. Carlson asked Orban why he believes his government, Orban's government, has described, in Carlson's word, as totalitarian. So here's what Viktor Orban said to Tucker Carlson on Fox News. Orban said that the real problem is his success.
But the fundamentals of this success are totally different than it is wished and run and created by many other Western countries. So the Western liberals cannot accept that inside the Western civilization there is a conservative national alternative which is more successful at the everyday life, at the level of than the liberal ones.
So Sarah Posner, respond to that. I mean, Orban is very clear. Again, just what he said there at the end. He sees a conservative national alternative that in Hungary is proving more successful than liberal ones. What do you think about that?
Well, he's clearly playing to the Fox News audience, right? He's playing to the American right, who's been fed propaganda from Tucker Carlson and others that woke liberals are ruining your life, that they're ruining the schools, that they've destroyed your traditions, that they're trying to take away your religion. And so he's trying to appeal to that audience by saying, look, you have an alternative to all this liberalism run amok in America. You can be like Hungary.
Jack, your thoughts on that?
Well, there he would be in making that pitch to American conservatives. He'd be pushing on an open door. I mean, again, to quote William F. Buckley, he famously said that the role of conservatism in the liberal culture is to stand athwart history and say, stop. Well, you know, that is the impulse that so many conservatives feel faced with a pluralistic society and a flourishing liberal culture. They're under assault from these things. The trouble is that the pressures that culture and society bring on people aren't matters of law. They're habit and custom and corporate decisions and imagery and marketing. In other words, they're not coercive, at least on their face. State power, law, the kind of thing that he's doing, that's coercive. And I think that's the dirty little secret here, that's what's so attractive to the American right, to use coercion, to use law, to use the state against the forces of modernity that William F. Buckley says we all want to say stop to.
You know, Sarah, as I'm sure you know, there's been quite a vigorous response from the likes of Rod Dreher and other American conservatives who are looking to Hungary as a potential model for the United States. The response being that American liberals, American media, progressives on Twitter essentially are making a tempest out of a teacup about Tucker Carlson's visit there, because they assert unequivocally that Hungary is still a democracy. There are elections, parliamentary elections coming up in 2022. So, to what Viktor Orban said earlier in that cut, what people are getting all their feathers ruffled about is that it's just he's a successful politician in a Hungarian democracy, but the democracy remains intact in their eyes, so that the United States shouldn't worry about adopting Orban-esque models here in this country, in our politics. What would be your response to that?
Well, you know, this is a very similar thing that religious right activists told me in 2018 about Orban, that they still have elections in Hungary, so what's the problem? But as Orban himself has admitted or bragged, Hungary is an illiberal democracy, and it's not a true democracy if you've rigged the elections, gerrymandered districts so that you win elections, and destroyed a free press and an independent judiciary. But I think that the American right's affection for this model is demonstrated to us by their either ranging from silence to cheerleading for Trump's stolen election lies. So, to say that liberals are making a mountain out of a molehill about Tucker Carlson's visit to Budapest is just, Dreher is trying very hard to downplay it. But I think this is a six alarm fire if you add it in to what the American right is doing in the United States.
Okay. Yeah. So let me follow up on that a bit, because what does this also say about how far the Republican Party itself has moved? Because we talked about Orban's relationship with particular influential Republican strategists, but the party as a whole, I mean, just to sort of circle back to where we were a little while ago, maybe 10, no, let's take it back further, 15-ish years ago, what did the Republican Party view what was its view of the likes of Viktor Orban?
Well, as I said, when George W. Bush was president and was following, his State Department was following what was basically the bipartisan foreign policy consensus, that it was the role of the United States State Department and Foreign Service officers and, you know, people working in these fledgling democracies in Eastern and Central Europe. Remember that these countries had not been democracies for very long, that it was the United States' position that we should be promoting democracy and stopping authoritarianism. And that was back in the early 2000s, and fast forward 20 years, and basically it's the mainstream position of the Republican Party to cheerlead for Viktor Orban. The late John McCain in 2014, I think it was, called Viktor Orban a neo-fascist dictator getting in bed with Vladimir Putin. Okay? There's no one in the Republican Party who would say that today.
Jack, go ahead.
Well, that is frightening, putting it that way. And that what a way to establish the perspective. John McCain spoke out of that, from that post-war, that really indeed Cold War, moral consensus about what America should stand for in the world. And that is simply by the board now. I mean, in Donald Trump, we had the least patriotic president we've ever had. Every time he could, he talked down that vision of America. The idea that we stand for something, the idea that we should be a shining city on the hill. He wanted no part of that. He would relativize. You think Putin's a killer? We've got our killers. You think? And I think that derogation that he engaged in is sort of caught on among his. They're not. You don't hear them now saying what a great country this is. Look at Carlson. He's saying, well, I mean, who's the freer country, Hungary or the United States? That's of course an absurd question to ask, but it's real to him because that's the things he likes are freer there. The ability to strike at cultural pluralism.
Hmm. Sarah, you mentioning Putin here a couple of times. How is there kind of a relationship between Viktor Orban and how he is leading in Hungary, and oddly what Putin is doing in Russia? Or am I grasping at straws here?
You are not grasping at straws, and the same reasons why the American religious right admires Orban, they admire Putin for the same reasons. His strongman tendencies are admired. His crackdown on LGBTQ rights is also admired. I had an American religious right activist tell me that he got it that Putin's anti-gay propaganda law, claiming that prohibits talking to school children about LGBTQ issues, that he would like to see something like that here. But of course, we can't do that because of our First Amendment. We couldn't restrict speech like that. Just another example of how they recognize that we have a different system here, but they kind of wish that it was more like Russia or Hungary. Putin also has made many appeals to this traditional heritage or culture, and also these traditional values that are rooted in Christianity. So it's definitely of a piece, and it's of a kind. And these are the same things that are drawing the attention and the admiration of the American right.
Okay, so we've got three or four minutes left here. I wanted to circle back actually to where we began, because I wonder if there's a kind of point at which influential ideas might percolate amongst the elite of any particular political persuasion. In this case, we're focusing on the American right, or that nexus between the American right and Christian conservatism in this country. So ideas can sort of percolate there, but then all of a sudden they break through in to a much larger audience. It seems to me that this could be that moment. This is where we began the conversation, but I wanted to focus a little bit of our discussion at the end here again on this. Do you think that Tucker Carlson is influential enough? He's got about 3 million viewers a night. That him talking up Hungary to his viewers could actually have an on-the-ground effect here in the United States, Sarah?
Absolutely. Carlson's audience is huge. He gets beyond his audience, a lot of play on social media, and he is extremely influential and admired. And for some of his audience might have already heard the pro-Orban discussion via other channels of information that they might be connected to. But many of his audience may not have. And it's almost as if there had been some gas put down on this and Tucker Carlson lit the match.
You know, Jack, in the minute and a half so we have left here to go, I think the most gripping part of this conversation to me is how Orban himself, American conservatives who admire him, and Hungarians as well, who voted for Viktor Orban, would say, yeah, you have all your concerns, but once again, this is happening within a democracy, in a parliamentary democracy, nonetheless. So, you know, this is an expression of the will of the people of Hungary to protect their fundamental Hungarian identity, if I could put it that way. And so you can see its power here in the United States amongst the Americans who are really concerned about what they define as a particular kind of Americanness, and that they could protect it through the very political systems that we have here. So just your last thoughts on the model that Orban is providing in the United States.
Yes, he's seeming to legitimate democracy as a way to reaction, cultural reaction. But I think the Republicans are beyond that. They're dispensing with democracy, right? The President of the United States is out saying he won the election. Democracy doesn't work. It's rigged. They're going to say it again in the next election and the next. So I think they're trying to subvert democracy, not say, in that way, I'd give Orban a better marks than the Republicans. He's not, at least publicly, spurning democracy.
Well, Jack Beattie is On Point News Analyst with us from Hanover, New Hampshire. Jack, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And Sarah Posner, investigative journalist and reporting fellow at Type Investigations and author of Unholy, Why White Evangelicals Worship at the Altar of Donald Trump. Sarah, it's been great to have you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.